Room 93 WMPC, good morning and welcome to Caring for the Community, brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee. While May is Mental Health Awareness Month, this is a subject that we can discuss all year round. This morning, we have a guest in the studio with us, Dr. Stacy Dixon, a psychologist and director of behavior support. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Magic. Thank you. Happy to be here.
You're so welcome. Dr. Dixon is a psychologist and director of behavior support at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Magic. Thank you.
And thank you for being here. I'm glad that you're here to talk about this today. According to the Blue Cross Blue Shield Health Index, 85% of those who are diagnosed with major depression also have one or more serious chronic health conditions. It's clear that our mental health is incredibly important to our overall health and well-being. While not every mental health issue is major or life-threatening, it's still not a topic that everyone is comfortable talking about. So today we're going to discuss what you need to know about mental health, and Dr. Dixon is here to talk to us about that. So let's get started with the basics about mental health and who should be concerned about this.
Well, everyone is the short answer to that question. Everyone should be concerned about mental health because we all have our own selves that we should be caring about and our overall health. But also, everyone that we love, that we come in contact with, may have indicators of some mental health conditions that we could be helpful to them. We also want everyone to know that there's really nothing to be ashamed of.
Right.
Just like your lungs are an organ, your liver is an organ, your brain is just another organ in your body, and it controls the way you think, the way you feel, and the way you behave. So if something is not working adequately in your brain as an organ, then you're going to have big shifts in how you feel, how you're thinking, how you're behaving, sleeping and eating. So we need everyone around us to understand that if something changes in our behavior or the way we're presenting ourselves, that it may be something to attend to with our mental health.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Speaking of people noticing and paying attention, can you tell us a little bit about these signs and symptoms that people should watch out for?
Yes. Overall, for yourself, you should pay attention to your level of discomfort. And that includes your feelings of discomfort. So if you're sad or down, have you been that way for more than a couple of weeks? How are you sleeping? And if there have been changes in your sleep habits that are really affecting the way you function day to day. Are you having trouble at work, not producing the way you normally would? Has something shifted there? Are you being as productive in the rest of your life, in your leisure activities, in the way you care for your family, and the way you relate to your friends? Are you having trouble in those relationships? Are people telling you, like, you know, you've been really edgy lately, or something's just not right with how you're behaving? It's a big change. So any of these could be signs of somebody needing to see somebody about potential mental health issues.
Okay. And what are some of those things that could cause these changes? Because there are several things that could happen in your life or some kind of traumatic event. What are some of those things that could happen to cause this?
The major stressor for anyone is when we lose somebody we love or lose something that's important to us. So if it was a job that you loved, if it was your home, or you lose some social networks, sometimes that comes with loss of a job. You now lost a lot of friends that you had contact with day to day. It could be also that you're walking wounded, and that's kind of layman's terms for somebody who's experienced trauma in their lives. You've had something that damages who you are and how you feel about yourself. And unless it's attended to, you could be carrying that damage around in the way you're feeling and thinking and behaving.
Absolutely. And that could be like in the form of a death. Maybe you lost someone close to you that you love, or even relationships where you had a really bad breakup. You know, those kind of things can really traumatize a person also.
Absolutely. If you've been in abusive or oppressive relationships, you know, those take a toll long beyond the end of that relationship.
Okay. And so you mentioned earlier the symptoms could be the result of a medical condition or a sign of another underlying issue. Can you give us some examples of that?
Mm-hmm. When we have a change in our health status, that can really affect our mental health as well. So if you had a newly diagnosed condition, such as lupus, we know that people with lupus tend to have a lot of anxiety and depression. Or heart or respiratory conditions. Because those conditions affect the amount of oxygen getting to your brain, we expect your brain to be functioning differently, and we watch out for that. People with respiratory symptoms, if you're having a hard time breathing, you're going to get scared. Mm-hmm. Just like if you were starting to drown and your lungs couldn't get air, it's very anxiety-producing to have respiratory conditions. Changes to your thyroid often relate to your mood, so you may be very depressed or even starting to get kind of manic where everything's speeding up for you and you're making riskier choices in life. And it may also be something that you've been treated with. So pain medication, for example, have a big impact on your mood. It can be very depressing, and over a long term, if you become actually addicted to pain medication, you can also have a lot of anger and acting out behavior that wasn't like you prior to getting on that medicine. Steroids sometimes have that effect too. Mm-hmm. People who get on steroids for an inflammatory condition might end up very manic. So now you're raging and you're angry and you can't sleep, and it kind of has a cascading effect on how you behave.
So if you notice that you're having some of these symptoms and you're not really sure what to do or, you know, what to do about it, where should people turn? If they're experiencing one or more of these issues, what would they do? Who would they turn to?
Well, your best first person would be your primary care physician. Mm-hmm. And for adults, that might be your general practitioner, the doctor you go and see, you know, the most frequently. For children, it may be a pediatrician. But it is that provider who has known you for a longer period of time, usually. Mm-hmm. And so they have a good view of your overall health. If they've seen you repeatedly, they kind of know who you are and how you behave. And so if there's a change, they will understand that that's a change and not just this is your personality. And usually the primary care physician is the one that can make the best referrals for you. They have connections to specialists in the mental health field, so they can give you some ideas of where to turn. I did want to mention one other place that particularly women may turn to, and that's their OBGYN.
Okay.
Sometimes the first antidepressant a person ever gets on was prescribed by their OBGYN, and it may relate to postpartum depression, or it may relate to hormonal changes that go along with our menstrual cycles.
Okay. All right. I think that's a great idea. I've talked to my OBGYN about everything.
Right.
So tell us about the different kinds of providers who serve people with these mental issues.
And I'm glad you said providers, because you really can enter the doorway into mental health treatment through several different doors. One would be a psychiatrist. This is a person with a medical degree, and they're usually the ones who will write prescriptions for you. They do a thorough assessment of your sleeping, your eating, your behavior, your thinking and feeling, and they may or may not decide that medication could be helpful for this. You also may see a neurologist. So neurologists are medical doctors who deal with anything related to the brain. So a lot of times we think of them for treating seizures or a brain tumor or something like that, but they also may be the first contact you have related to changes in your mental health. You also may seek a psychologist or a licensed clinical social worker or another kind of counselor.
Okay.
And these are people, like a psychologist has typically a PhD in psychology, and they can do evaluations and do individual couples therapy, group therapy. If they're specializing in child and adolescent therapy, you may want to know that as well. And then if your faith has a big part in how you view your mental health, there are also faith-based counselors. Some of them are actually going to have other licenses that you may be able to access through your insurance, Or it may be as simple as going to your church or your synagogue and just asking who there can help with some counseling.
Okay. And I'm glad you mentioned psychiatrists, and then you mentioned psychologists. Because people often wonder, like, what's the difference between those two?
Yes. You know? It's easy to get confused.
All right. So are there other places for help that people can turn to as well? Because there are many like agencies also out here.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, so are there other places they could turn also?
Yes. I did want to mention that even if you may not be able to afford, you know, through your insurer, a mental health treatment, if you can't pay for the, you know, the deductibles and the copays, a lot of employers have something called an employee assistance program, an EAP, and they typically have some free sessions per year, you know, 4 to 12. I think the average is about 6 sessions that you can go to a licensed professional for this help, and then they can make recommendations at the end of that period. What some people don't know is if it's late in the year, you can use those 6 sessions late in the year, and as January rolls over, you're eligible for 6 more sessions through an EAP.
Okay. All right.
Also, there are local support groups. It may be based on what you're going through. If you're dealing with grief or divorce recovery, or you might have obsessive compulsive disorder, there are very specialized support groups that you can find just by looking up online. There are also faith-based groups. You'll find that a lot of churches will run divorce recovery groups.
Absolutely. All right. And it seems that we're mostly speaking about adults, I guess, but does this also affect children? Like if, you know, parents feel like maybe, you know, one of their children is experiencing some of these same symptoms, would they go about it the same way as far as to get help for their children?
Yes.
Especially young adults.
Yes. And for kids, going to a pediatrician, or also the school system. The school system provides some free counseling that your child is eligible for just by being a student in the public education system. But they also know good providers in your area and can make recommendations to you.
Okay, and I just wanted to bring that up because sometimes that's where it starts, you know, in adolescence, you know, when they're younger, and sometimes they carry it into their adulthood, you know.
As a matter of fact, the biggest time for onset of some very severe mental health conditions, such as bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, is that time when kids are going off to college.
Yes.
And all of a sudden there's this big break in their behavior, and families get really confused, like, how did this happen? Well, you know, unfortunately, it's just the time of life when certain symptoms tend to be evident.
Okay. All right. So is there anything else you want to add to help our listeners know what they need to do if they or someone they care about needs help with this issue?
Yes. Always reach out. Even if it starts with your friends or your family members, just reach out and start talking, because what we've learned is that secrets and silence just make mental health conditions worse. So being open, being honest with what you're struggling with, not only helps to educate the people that care about you with what you're struggling with, but it also decreases the stigma. I think if we were all more honest about our struggles, we wouldn't have the stigma that has historically gone along with mental health.
Okay, because if you're the person, sometimes you are afraid to reach out or talk to friends or family, and then, you know, it's great for people on the outside, family, friends, you know, relatives, to notice when you see these symptoms happening with someone, if it's your best friend or you know, just someone that you're close to, if you know they're an outgoing person and happy all the time, and all of a sudden all of those things change, that's probably a red flag.
Absolutely.
To try to get that person some help.
Well, and we need, all of us need kind of our team to help support us through life. And when you have serious mental illness, I'll use bipolar disorder as an example, you need a team to help you recognize when your mood is changing. Because typically you're the last one to know that you're getting a little bit manic. You're starting to have racing thoughts and stay up later at night. And make riskier decisions. And that's when you need your friends and your family to kind of say, you know, it might be time to go back to the doctor and let them know about these changes. So again, a team approach. Another thing that I think is really helpful for families and friends is to have open dialogue about the fact that everyone struggles with something.
Absolutely.
And so...
I'm sorry, I was going to say, you know, we applaud Mariah Carey. When someone like her comes out and says that she has this issue, you know, it helps with people who feel like, you know, I could never share that with anyone. You know, she's this big celebrity and she just recently came out and said that she struggles with bipolar disorder.
Yes.
So I'm glad when you see someone like that admit that, and it will help someone else come forward and say, I struggle with that as well. And then I guess the last thing I was going to ask is, or just to make sure that people understand that this is the reason we're discussing it, is that it's treatable and manageable, right? And and that's what happens when you see your doctor, is there the medications help you manage and be able to live a productive life, I guess.
Yes. And for most conditions, it's a combination of medication and
the therapy
and also a lot of family and social support. I can't stress enough how much a part of your overall treatment is the people around you.
Absolutely.
And how they respond to you.
Absolutely. And for the people around someone, don't disregard if someone reaches out to you and says, hey, I'm having these feelings, or, you know, because a lot of times they're like, oh, you know, get over it, deal with it, you know, and you'll be fine. And sometimes it's more than just that. Okay, I'll go take a nap and wake up and be okay. So, you know, notice and really take it to heart when, if someone comes to you and says that they need help or they're having a problem. So anything else would you like to add anything else for our audience today? I think we told them a lot of information.
I really just thank you for the opportunity, and I hope everybody is kind to each other, because that's what it takes for us
absolutely
to go through life.
And thank you so much for being here. You've been listening to Caring for the Community, brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee and Groove 93.